talking at the beginning of the week. We're going to have Joe Hardy lead us in order of prayer, and then we'll make sure everybody's here. Thank you.
Go ahead, Joe.
Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we thank you again for another wonderful day you've given us. Thank you for the time we get to spend together and study your word. Please be with us as we go throughout this study and help us keep our minds focused on you. In your son's name, amen.
Amen. All right. So I think Joe Hardy's here. Ben Hardy, are you here? Very good. All right. And Braden Roth. And Caleb Gwynn. And Clay Johnson. Very good. Daniel McConaughey. Is Daniel? Yeah, there you are. And Elijah Roberts. Ethan Hodge.
Here.
There's Ethan. Ethan Maxey is on his way. So do we have his folder?
Braden,
will you
give that to Ethan when he's actually here?
You don't have to run. Thanks for serving, Ethan.
Thank you.
Appreciate the cleanup crew. And Gabe Reynolds.
Here.
Jack Dryden.
Here.
Jack. And Joe Hardy. Joshua Balsamo. I'm trying not to call you Joseph. You are Joshua, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And there should be a Joshua Hodge, if I'm remembering correctly. Thank you, gentlemen, for distributing and getting to know everybody. Lee Reich. Thank you, Lee. Lucas. Hey, Barry. Luke Eaton. There he is. Luke Norfleet. The man's found his voice. Go, Luke. Good job. And Luke Smelser. Matthias Mitchell. There you go, Matthias. And Peyton Roth. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Look forward to you doing a lot of work this evening, trying to do some group things and trying to figure out exactly how to do that, because some of you have more knowledge than others, and so those of you who have more knowledge have more responsibility to share that with others who don't. And so tonight we're going to take a journey to Samaria, and then we're going to watch a revolt unfold where somebody comes in and turns out the lights on Jerusalem and the temple. So we're going to be looking at the Samaritans and the Maccabees and see how both of those intersect with Jesus when we get to the New Testament. So let's just quickly walk through the periods of Bible history. There's the period of the pre-flood, then there is the flood, and then there is the
scattering of the people.
All right, and then there is the patriarchs, and then there is the
Exodus,
and then there is the
wilderness,
and then there is the
invasion
and the conquest, and then we have rule by judges, and we have a
United Kingdom, divided kingdom, Judah alone. Captivity, term captivity, years of
silence,
life of Christ, early church, letters to the Christians.
Very good. The ladies that were teaching the 2 and 3 year olds had to do it this way for the church because the kids couldn't do it the inside way, the 2 and 3 year olds. Yes, sir.
Can we all give you a round of applause?
No. What you can do is go home and teach the periods of Bible history. That will be the better applause. Thank you very much.
Can you do that one more time for me to video you?
No. It's bad enough that Stephen's recording this thing. We sure don't want to see how foolish I look. You should have seen back home, my grandkids are doing it, and you're coaching me, and my wife's coaching me, and there are other ladies that are, this is what you're supposed to be doing, you know, so it's probably on a live stream at Case and Lane, but please don't go there, okay?
You shouldn't have said that.
I know. I've had a lot of fun with you guys. I really enjoy this class. You guys interact well together, and so I want you to start thinking with me. If you turn to John, I think it's 10... about verse 22, John 10 and verse 22. Somebody read that for us.
Now it was a feast of dedication in Jerusalem, and it was winter.
Aha, the feast of
dedication,
and it was winter. You want to guess which month in our months?
December.
It's December, because it is the feast of
lights.
Feast of lights, or the feast of Hanukkah. All right. And so Peyton asked a really good question after class last night. He said, basically, what is our goal? He says, I want to know what a goal is. And so why are we studying these particular things? And the purpose is for us to see Christ and to see the culture into which Christ stepped at just the right time. So that when we see Jesus dealing with the Samaritans, getting called a Samaritan as if it's a bad name, and see his interaction with them, and then seeing why everybody wants to think, well, Jesus, are you going to come in and run out the Romans and be a king here in Jerusalem? Well, that was what the Maccabees had done. And so what I'm hoping for us to see is the culture of the first century and the 21st century have a lot of similarities, and we want to know how to interact with our culture to counter the culture that's leading people away from God. So I hope that is a brief explanation of what we're trying to accomplish. But you always want to ask that question. It's an excellent question. And it helped me step back and think, now, why am I doing this? So thank you very much for that. In the Old Testament, now it's your work to help us to understand what happened at the dividing of the kingdom. Tell me where we would read about the kingdom rupturing, the civil war that unfolds in the divided kingdom. Where would you read about that in... First Kings. You got it, Braden. What chapter did you say?
Chapter 10.
All right, chapter 10. And I think we might want to move a little bit farther, but everybody go to First Kings and start in chapter 10 and see if you see a more definitive time or chapter.
It's 12.
Okay, chapter 12. All right, in chapter 12, in the south is Rehoboam, and in the north is...
Jeroboam.
Has God promised Jeroboam that he would receive 10 tribes? He has. God's given him a promise. You're going to get 10 of the tribes. But what happens to Jeroboam? Look about the middle of the chapter. What's he start fearing?
A revolt.
Pardon?
A revolt.
Yes. And what would cause the revolt? He's got 10 tribes. He's got the northern tribes. Anything north of Jerusalem, pretty much, up from Ephraim all the way up to Dan, are... for Jeroboam. But why would people head south? What would happen that would cause people to head south?
People yes. would have to sacrifice in Jerusalem.
All right. God had named Jerusalem as the place where he would place his name. It had formerly been Shiloh, and a temple has been built, and that's where the sacrifices are offered. That's where the Levites are. And you guys can keep watching that bug. It's going to probably be flying around. Sometimes you just have to kind of go, okay, we've noticed it, now we can move on. And so feel free to come on in. Jason, we're glad to have you. And so as we're finding out about the Samaritans, we first want to find out what caused the rupture, what caused the civil war. And so Jeroboam freaks out. My voice just did that, excuse me. Jeroboam just says, man, they'll all go. And what will happen to me? When the people go back south, what's going to happen to me? What's the text tell you?
They'll want to stay in the south.
Okay, they're going to want to stay in the south. And what's going to happen to me?
We'll kill them.
They're going to kill me. All right? That I'm the rebel leader, but they're going to turn on me and they're going to kill me. So he has total lack of faith in God. So what does he do to try to get everybody to follow him and to worship up in, and
Dan
I want you to tell
Bethel.
Me, Dan and Bethel, all right? Far north, central part of the country, he chooses two new places in 1 Kings chapter 12. In 1 Kings chapter 12, we are noticing then that Jeroboam says, hey, I need to reconstruct worship, place of worship. What else is changing? I want you guys to just start digging together. And I'm going to give you a couple minutes and tell me all the things that Jeroboam decides to change to try to save his hide.
One of the things was like object of worship.
Okay, what's the object of worship that is correct?
God.
God. And what is he over and over condemned?
Idolatry.
So what's the objects of worship now?
Golden calves.
You see it? He's got one in Dan. One in Bethel. Golden calves. Ever been golden calves in Israel's experience before?
Exodus 32.
Yeah, Exodus 32. That go well?
Nope.
No, it was a bitter thing to drink. Okay? And so that wasn't a good idea before. What else is changing?
He made shrines on every high place.
Okay. All right. He made what on every high place?
Shrines.
Shrines. Okay. Yeah. It's just old years. Okay. Made shrines on every high place. What else?
He changed the day of the feast.
What's the day of the feast?
Okay,
what's supposed to be the right month?
Seventh month,
15th day. We're looking at the day of what's that feast? Day of Atonement and the Tabernacles. All right, that 7-day tenting out period to remind them of being in Egypt. And so he changed that by a month. And who's supposed to do the offering of the sacrifices?
The Levites.
I'm watching so many people watch this bug. And so the Levites are supposed to. So what's he done to the Levites?
Fired them.
He did. All right. Now, some of you stay right there in 1 Kings 12, and some of you go to 2 Chronicles 11. And so you just got fired from your job. Your job, remember, you've been given a special city. What were there, about 46 of those cities, something like that, 48? And you've got a place to raise your animals and your garden throughout all of Israel, but you just got fired. We'll just go with your term there. What does 2 Chronicles 11 tell you about what Jeroboam did to the Levites? I think it's around verse 16 or so.
The Levites left.
Yeah. Who left? Christopher, who left?
The Levites.
The Levites. Did anybody else leave the north?
Those who set their hearts to seek the Lord God.
Okay, the people who are serious about serving God, they head where?
Jerusalem.
The very thing that he didn't want to happen, people who love God, they're going to give up their lands, give up their properties, and they're going to go to the south. And they're going to give up all of those things because they're committed to God. Sometimes you have to leave your job, leave your family, leave your land in order to follow God. But you don't get that in the Kings. You only get that in the Chronicles. Yes, Clay?
There's probably different types of people, but do you think people would have left anyways, even if he had kept the place of sacrifice in Jerusalem? Do you think there would have been people who would have probably not wanted to go that far?
Well, he's trying to create a convenient religion.
Right.
And so sometimes there's some people who, if it's not convenient, I'm not going. Mm-hmm. But people who are committed are going to go however far it is that they need to go. And there's a possibility that some would have gone anyway.
Right. I just wonder how many more were more devoted to, doing the right thing than he thought they were.
Yeah. He might have strategically miscalculated. Okay. Anything else changes? Okay, let's go to the chapter that would tell us about Israel 200 years later being carried off by the Assyrians into captivity. So we've got 1 Kings 12. What's our next passage? Go with the Kings.
2 Kings.
2 Kings. Good. 2 Kings. Keep turning.
Eight, 17.
2 Kings 17. And so why is God carrying them into captivity? They did not listen. They were stiff-necked like their fathers. They didn't believe in the Lord their God. They rejected his statutes. They forsook all his commandments. And they worshiped the Asherah of the Baal, the host of heaven. They had the fertility gods. And in verse 17, what did they do to their kids to satisfy the gods?
Offered them in the fire of Molech.
They burned them. That's right. And so some people think that it's the best thing to do to kill your kids. You know anybody like that today? Do you know how many millions of kids have died over the last, since 1973, because it was the convenient thing that mom and the boyfriend or the dad thought was the right thing to do? But do you ever wonder what happens to those babies? You ever wonder what happens to those baby parts? I don't want to take you there. But I want you to think about the sacrifices of their children in the fire. They burn their kids. And their thinking is that if I give this one to God, boy, Brother Hall did a great job with that this morning, didn't he? That the gods are upset, so I'll just go ahead and give this child to the gods, and maybe then maybe God will be happy, and then he'll bless me with more fertility. And so burning your kids is not a new thing, but it's a continuing problem for people who don't love God. And so that's part of the problem. How's Judah doing? Verse 19, is Judah really committed to the Lord? The north is obviously not committed to God.
Judah did not keep the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel, which they made.
Yeah, Judah's not doing a whole lot better. Judah's left alone for a little while, but they're really not making very much better choices. And who could be a focal point of the responsibility of the people of Israel just going down the wrong direction? Notice verse 21. If you were going to pin the problems of Israel on the choices and leadership of one man, who would that man be?
Jeroboam.
The sins of Jeroboam. You read chapter after chapter. The sins of Jeroboam. And so he made critical choices that allowed people to commit great sin. And so they didn't depart from that for the next 200 years. So what does the Lord do in verse 23?
Removed Israel from his sight.
They're taken away. They wouldn't listen to the servants, the prophets. Can you think of any prophet who would especially have been appealing to the northern tribes to come back to God and quit playing the harlot? I tried to give you... Yeah, it's Hosea. Yeah, there are others, but I wanted you to think about that picture that's being given there. And of course, those of you who studied in Gary's class, you saw those graphic pictures in Ezekiel as well. So Israel's carried away into captivity by what nation?
Assyria.
See it there in verse 23? All right, so what's Assyria's plan of action to deal with their captives? What does Assyria do when they take over a country?
They split them up.
That's right. They separate them out and they send them all over the place. So they're taking Israel out of their land, leaving a few of the people, but who's coming in? You want to give me the names of all those places? I don't want to give them to you. I can't pronounce them. But you got people from all these other countries that are infiltrating into the land of Israel, into Palestine, and they are going to become what people?
Samaritans.
The Samaritans. Can you prove that? I like that answer, but can we prove it? So what happens is these people are not really knowing the God of heaven at all. And who's coming and chewing them up because they're really not serving God? Read the text, guys. You're used to me feeding you. Who comes in and just starts chewing on them because they're not serving God? Go ahead, Ben.
In verse 26, it says, "So the king of Assyria was told, the nations that you have carried away and placed in the city of Samaria do not know the law of God in the land. Therefore, he has sent lions among the fold. They are killing them because they do not know the law of God, the law of the God of the
land." Yeah, they're saying, wait a second, the lions have come in and they are chewing us up. Where is this area, by the way? You read it there. There was an S word you said.
Samaria.
There's Samaria. All right, that's a land region, but it's also going to become the name of a group of people who are intermingled from several different ethnic backgrounds. Are there many races or is there one race?
One, the human race.
There's one blood, isn't there? When you read, is it Acts 17? We're all made of one blood. So I really like to think about the fact that there is one race. It's the human race. But there's lots of different ethnicities with different complexions and colors and things like that. Was Jesus a white man?
Nope.
He wasn't. I'm glad you guys figured that out. You know, he's Jewish. He's Eastern, Middle Eastern. He is dark complected. He was not the picture in the guys that were beautiful, European, blue-eyed. That was not Jesus. Okay?
Yes, right.
Okay? So, yeah, that's not accurate. That's not Jesus. And so as we think about these ethnicities, you've got all these different groups, but they don't know the Lord. So who comes back to help them know the Lord in chapter 17? Who comes back to, oh, well, the king of Assyria says, oh, well, I'll send somebody back and he'll tell you what the Lord wants you to do.
The priest that he carried away.
The priest that he carried away. Well, let's think about that. Who would have been the priest that he carried away? Would that have been the Levites?
Nope,
because they're down south. So who are the priests that got carried away? The priests that are offering the sacrifices at Dan and Bethel at the wrong time. So, when the priest comes back, is he giving them the right information?
Nope.
I think the lions might still be chewing. Okay? And so, they've gotten bad information from an ignorant king, and they've still got the idolatrous problems that are going to continue. Yes, sir, Ethan?
In verse 28, it says, "Then one of the priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and dwelt in Bethel, and taught them how they should fear the Lord."
All right. Taught them how they should fear the Lord. Do you think he got it right? He probably taught them about the God of heaven, but he probably didn't teach them proper practices in that regard.
Also, Jeroboam's the Israel one, right?
That's right.
Okay, so yeah. Whenever he set up the idol, the golden calves, he said, "These are the gods that brought you out of Egypt." So he could have just been telling them about the calves.
Yes, because some of them were teaching that, even, what was it, Exodus 32? Yeah, Exodus 32. Yes. Yes. And so see Samaria there in verse 29? So they're fearing the Lord, verse 32 says, but they're also worshiping the idols. They feared the Lord and they served their own gods. Now you have the background for the Samaritans. Yes, Ben?
Actually, in verse 32, it says they also fear the Lord.
Yes. So they have this cosmopolitan religion where they believe in Jehovah God, they worship Him some, but they also worship their own gods. So are people still worshiping in Samaria today? Is there a Samaritan temple?
Probably.
Go to Nehemiah, chapter 2, chapter 4, and help me. We're moving on down in time now. We've come back from captivity, and we've got Nehemiah coming back about 445, trying to help rebuild the city, rebuild the walls, and who's fighting against it? Give me a name of a guy from Samaria. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. Sanballat, Sambalat, whatever.
Sambalat.
Yeah, he's from where? He's from Samaria. And then when you get to chapter 4, after Nehemiah tells them in chapter 2, you have no portion, you have no rights. See the last verse of chapter 2? You guys aren't part of us. You're not going to help us build. So in chapter 4, what do the Samaritans and the Ammonites do in order to try to run interference?
So they try to discourage the people?
Absolutely. They are mocking them, laughing at them, discouraging the people. So now are you starting to see why Jews and Samaritans don't like each other?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so these Samaritans are mad because you guys have moved back in. We're in 1947, 1948, in the Seven-Days War, if you know anything about what happened there. And so they're saying, wait a second, the Arabs are saying, we don't want Jews back in here. And they're very different motivations. And so the Samaritans are trying to tear this thing down. And so Sanballat, according to history outside of the Bible, said, well, if we can't be with your temple, we'll build our own. Where would they have built their temple? Think of the New Testament. Think of Jesus. Think of water at a well.
On the hill.
On the hill. That's good. It's on the hill. Can you be a little more specific about which hill? Pardon?
In Samaria.
Samaria. At the little town of Sychar. In between there are two mountains. And when the people came into the land, they were to have the blessings and the curses. And one of those mountains was named Mount Gerizim. And so who's pointing up and saying, yeah, but our fathers worshipped up on this mountain.
Was that the woman at the well?
It was. So see, now you know what Jesus is dealing with when he's dealing with her background, because she's saying, hey, we've been for the last 400 years worshipping up here, but you Jews say we should worship down here. Right. So I'm told that Sanballat set up his son-in-law as the first high priest. At least back in the 1960s and 70s, that temple was still there, and there were still Samaritan priests, and they were still offering sacrifices on that mountain. But they only accepted the first five books of the Old Testament, and there might have been some deviations in exactly what was said in those first five books. So now you know the Samaritans. But now, what would we know about the Samaritans in the New Testament? Now we're moving, okay? So where would be a good place to go in the New Testament to get a feel for the Samaritans?
John 4.
That's right, John 4. Now, while you're turning to John 4, you are turning to John 4, please. Let's think about, does Jesus ever have any other interactions with Samaritans?
There is a verse that says, for Jews have no dealings with Samaritans.
There is. I wonder if that's in John 4. Huh. I'm not remembering for sure. I'm not playing games with you. And did somebody get mad at Jesus? Of course, they'd call him the Prince of the Devils, and they'd call him all kinds of names. Did Jesus ever get called a Samaritan? Oh, that was an N-word. That was a bad word. They were really slamming him because they hated the Samaritans. But what did Jesus ever interact with Samaritans? Yeah, all right. John 4 is a given. You got to give me some others. Were there 10 guys that had some kind of a disease?
Oh, yeah.
And was one of them willing to come back and say thank you?
Yeah.
And he was a
Samaritan.
Was there a guy who, no, he wasn't a Levite, no, he wasn't a priest, but he saw the guy that was mugged and he was a good
Samaritan.
So see, Jesus is dealing with these prejudices. And Jesus is helping the Jews to see, hey, Samaritans are people too. We're all of one blood, and I care about the Samaritans too. So I want you to notice in John 4, go ahead, Luke.
I think this is just a straight up Gentile, not a Samaritan.
That's okay.
The woman who said like even the dogs get some food, was she a Gentile or a Samaritan?
Yes, yeah, she was farther north, up in the Tyre Sidon region. But she makes that point that can I have a crumb? You know, at least the pet dogs get to eat the crumbs from the table. And so you made a point that she's a straight up Gentile. Were the Samaritans not straight up Gentiles? Not really, because didn't they have some share in? They'd lived in the land. They'd shared the Pentateuch. They did some fearing of the Lord, as Ethan had read to us. So they do have some closeness to the God of heaven than the typical Gentile. So I like that phrase there. Now, we want to think about then in John chapter 4. What does your Bible say in the first three or four verses? Jesus had to, or it was necessary, or something. Jesus did what?
He needed to go through Samaria.
He did? And some translations say he had to go through Samaria. Any different translations?
The alternative was to go up and around.
Okay, very good. All right, and that's typically what good Jews did. Good Jews wouldn't put a foot in Samaritan soil. And so what they did is north of the Dead Sea, they would cross the Jordan, go up the Transjordan Plain, and then kick back across the Jordan just south of the Galilee if they needed to go north, because they sure weren't going to be found in the region of Samaria. And so what's the culture issues that this woman's dealing with when Jesus comes to that well? Jesus is tired. I'm thinking it's noon. You may think it's evening. And he's tired, and he sent the disciples to McDonald's to get some lunch. So he's there alone, and he's probably tired and thirsty. And what does he do when the woman comes up? He asks her for something. You guys have been talking about sharing the gospel this week in this tent. Some of you have been. One of the really helpful things to do is ask your neighbor for help. Ask somebody to help you and watch how that will spawn a conversation. There were two people baptized into Christ shortly before we left Budapest because I helped a guy carry a refrigerator into their apartment. I saw he needed help, he was right there, and I just helped him carry it in. And then he and his wife, who was a lawyer, they started studying with me, and they chose to be baptized into Christ because they were willing to be helped and I was willing to help them. Sometimes it's mowing the neighbor's grass. Sometimes it's changing the flat tire. Sometimes it's taking the leaves out of the gutters. But those are what we might call pre-evangelism. And when you serve other people and they see you care about them, they're going to care about your God. Okay, yes, Ben.
I've heard a saying that says people don't care how much you know until they know how much you
It
care.
Is absolutely true. And you know, when Dan the other day was emphasizing you need to use your words, I kept wanting to say, Jesus didn't you only use his words. Did you see Jesus as compassionate, mingling with the people, serving the people, healing the people? But obviously they needed to hear the words of life. But I'll tell you what, words are cheap. If they're not followed with some action, with some compassionate action, people don't care about your words. They want to see it in your life. Okay? So Jesus is dealing with this woman. Did Jews typically talk to Samaritans? Did Jewish men typically talk to women who were not their wives in a public setting? No. So is she shocked when Jesus asked her for something?
Yep.
You, being a Jew, ask me, being a Samaritan, for some water? Do you see how she's shocked by this breakthrough in cultural barriers? And then what happens? Well, if you'd ask me for a drink,
you'd never be thirsty.
I'd give you living water. Oh man, she's on it. Give me that living water. I won't ever have to come out here and haul water anymore. And then he starts talking to her about, well, go get your husband. Go get your husband. Well, I don't have a husband. You don't? Well, you've been married 5 times. And you're right. The guy you're living with now is not your husband. And if you think that's a far-fetched story, I've had people ask me to speak or teach on this subject and come out of the audience crying because they've been married six times. So, here's a woman who's living, not with her husband, but having sexually immoral relationship with some man, and Jesus just describes her life. So what does she come up with next? You're telling me my life's story. You must be a prophet. You think she wants to continue the discussion about who she's sleeping with? What does she do?
Goes and tells
him. Oh, by the way, let's talk about something controversial. You guys say we're supposed to worship down here in Jerusalem, but we Samaritans think you're supposed to worship right up here on the hill. You see, and that's going to happen when you start talking to people about their spiritual life. And you start getting personal about how it's going to change your life, what are they going to want to do? Oh, you Church of Christ people, you think baptism is the only thing there is and it just saves you and that's all you care about. Where are you going to go next? Does he go on the journey with her when she takes him up that hill? He does. He says, yeah, there's a time when God has said to worship in Jerusalem, but now the time is to do what?
Worship in spirit.
Worship God in spirit and in truth. And that's who God's seeking to be his worshiper. So what does the woman do next? This Samaritan woman, who is obviously immoral, the people of town would know that. What's she do?
Goes and tells everybody.
Hey man, you guys got to come and see this guy. Does the people of Samaria come and see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the whole town comes out. And then what did they tell her? Has she been giving her personal testimony when she went back into town?
Yeah.
Whoa, you ought to see my interaction with this guy. Don't be afraid to give your personal testimony. But don't leave it there. Because it doesn't really matter about your personal testimony nearly as it matters about the testimony of Jesus Christ. But she says, man, this guy's told me everything I ever did. And the people come out, and what do they say at the end of John chapter 4? We no longer believe because you said. Now why do they believe?
Because they heard Jesus.
We heard it from him. So your goal is to get people to Jesus. All right. So now do you understand the Samaritan? Now see why the Jews so much hated the Samaritans and the Samaritans hated the Jews too. Both ways. Yes, Luke?
Super quick question. Whenever she says, I've just heard this a couple times lately by some people, whenever she says, give me this loving water, do you think she's being sarcastic or do you think she's like genuinely really interested?
Well, based on, I think later, based on who she comes to realize who he is, she understands that this is a spiritual reference, not a physical one. But I'll tell you what, if you had to haul 2 5-gallon buckets two times a day to the house, you'd be pretty excited to have water, pumped water right to your house. So I think initially she just thinks, oh man, give me this water. She's thinking on physical plane, I think initially. I don't know. That's one person's opinion. That's all it's worth. Okay. All right. So we've got the Samaritans and we've got Jesus interacting with them, going through their land, talking with them. He's teaching the whole area. Now, later, after Jesus goes back to heaven, where does Jesus say, I want you guys to go here? Where are they supposed to start with the message?
Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, and then where's the second place? Go to Jerusalem, Judea, then
Samaria.
Wow, that would have been tough for Jews. I want you to go to Samaria. Can you tell me an evangelist who goes up to Samaria?
Philip.
That's right. Acts chapter 8. And so, if Jesus goes and teaches them, what are his people going to do? Go and teach them. And so, who on earth should we teach? Go into
all the world
and share the gospel. Baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I taught you. And so, we want to take the gospel to everybody. Muslims, African Americans, Hispanics, Caucasian. And you know, today we're really making some strides, I think, in becoming more colorblind. But recently, who do you think's stirring all this stuff up in the United States? Who do you think's behind this?
Satan.
Satan is the one who's the mastermind behind it to try to destroy the cause of Christ. Don't fall into his trap. Right? Now, tell me what you know about the map. Any more questions on the Samaritans? Now you're equipped to speak to the Samaritans. Yes, sir, Joshua.
Is there something that the word Samaritan or Samaria means?
Samaria becomes the capital city of the northern kingdom. That's where Jeroboam, later Omri, makes that his capital city. It's simply a reference to the land area. the land area was called geographically Samaria, so the people who lived in that land area were called Samaritans. I don't know that it has any other meaning other than that. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I like the verse 42 of chapter 4 and the response they give to the woman afterwards.
Go ahead.
So this takes place after the Samaritan woman finds them, and they say, and they were saying to the woman, "It is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for what we have heard for ourselves and know that this one is indeed the Savior of the world."
Yeah.
So they didn't go only rely on what she said. They found out the truth from themselves, and because of that, they became also believers.
And it's exactly, and so our goal is to not have people listen to us, take our word for it, is to teach them to be truth investigators.
And let them find out on their own as well.
Yes, yes. Help lead, but let them dig it out. Absolutely. Yeah. Really good. Anything about the Samaritans you want to ask? Let's move on then. We've started about 400 years before Jesus. Let's go down to about 200 years before Jesus. Those four generals of Alexander, which two of those generals, I'm not looking for their names so much as their land area, are kind of fighting and the Jews are kind of stuck in the middle? It's been the case for centuries.
Egypt
with the Ptolemies, and Syria with the Seleucids. All right, those are the names of the dynasties of those two generals. So the Ptolemies have been in power up to about 200, but the Seleucids say, wait a second, we want Palestine for ourselves. And then about 175, Antiochus, or Antiochus, please know that Antiochus is a really popular name, has been for a long time, he decides, we're going to come in. And then Antiochus number 4 is really feeling the pressure because there's this kingdom called Rome that's starting to whoop on them and cause them to have to pay taxes. And so the people of Syria are having a king who says, I am a god. In fact, I am the physical and human manifestation of Zeus, the greatest of the Greek gods. And he has an epiphany. So he's known as Antiochus Epiphanes, and he decides that he's a god. And so his people and the Jews have to worship him as a god. Any problems for Jews there? Worshiping God, Jehovah God, the one true God, and him only shall you serve. So this guy brings his forces down around 175 or so and says, no more Judaism, no more worship in the temple. You're going to worship me as God. And then his forces take blood of a, in your notes there, it says blood of a sow. That's not so. That's a female hog. And he just takes hog blood and spreads it all over the tabernacle, just defiling the tabernacle. Then he turns the lights out on the temple. And runs the Jews out, runs them out of town. How do you think the Jews are feeling about now?
Not very good.
Mighty low. Well, there's an old man, Mattathias Hasmoneus. And he's near Jerusalem. And Mattathias is told, you got to bow down and worship. And if I do it in my old hill country of West Virginia, I ain't going to do it. And he said no, and he had 5 sons. And he's an old man, and he knows that he can't fight this on his own, so Simon, his son, becomes the family leader. But Judas, the next son, becomes the hammer. And so Judas is really good at guerrilla warfare, and he jumps the Syrians and his smaller forces as people, it's kind of a Robin Hood experience. As people come to him out in the forest, then they start whooping on the Syrians, and the Syrians are being defeated over and over. But by 165, 164, they finally get enough power to come into Jerusalem. And then what do you think they relight?
The candles.
And then there is, because of that, a feast of
lights.
Feast of dedication, feast of lights, the Hanukkah. And so did Jesus go ahead and go along with that feast? Mm-hmm. Did he go to Jerusalem? Was he in the temple during the feast of dedication?
Yeah.
He was. All right. So there's a cultural event that now you see the connection, but now Judas is dead, and now we've got other guys coming up in the Maccabees. The Maccabees movement is weakening, but now Jerusalem has a new enemy. It's called Rome. And now we're paying taxes to the Romans, and now the Roman soldiers are occupying the area, and we've got Roman governors. And so what do you think the Jews are thinking now? We need another we need another Judas. We need another hammer. We need somebody like David to come and run out every Roman or slit their throat and be done with them. So they needed a Messiah. You see that culture? Yes, Peter.
I was just going to add that it seems to me that they're expecting someone to come at some point so they can get rid of the Romans and they can establish a rule again.
Exactly. We want our country back.
Yeah.
Just like that had happened about 150 years earlier. We want it back. We need our Messiah. We need our warring king. Some of the Essene writing seems to indicate some of that as well in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So I've just introduced now some other cultural events that are going to lead to a lot of political division. The Sadducees are the wealthy aristocrats that are going to follow down a line and they're going to become priests. Not necessarily tied to the Levites, but they're going to vote on who's the high priest. John Hyrcanus of the Maccabees is a high priest, but there's other Jews who are saying, wait a second, we just wanted to get back to the temple. We just wanted to worship God. You guys are wanting to create a civil empire. So some of the more devout Jews from the Hasidim are saying, we're not in anymore. We're backing out because we want to make sure we're worshiping God very carefully. We're wanting to tithe exactly right. We're wanting to do like Ezra taught us, to make sure we follow every rule so that God will never come and take our country away from us again. Who might you think among the religious groups you know that were very, very religiously careful and meticulous and wanted to get it exactly right?
Pharisees.
Because they were reading the oral traditions and they said the traditions trump the scriptures. So the Pharisees were the conservatives. And they wanted to do things right. The Sadducees were the people who said, oh, you got to live and let live. Got to take the Greeks in. And so the Sadducees don't believe in what?
The resurrection.
They don't believe in the resurrection. They don't believe in angels. Matthew 22, Acts 23. The Sadducees are the liberals. The Pharisees are the conservatives. Are there risks on both sides of that? Absolutely. You need to find balance. Observations?
So are the zealots kind of like leftovers from like the Maccabees and they're still like trying to take over Loki?
Absolutely. And so when Jesus chooses 12 guys, does he choose the zealot?
Yep. Yeah.
He's the guy that wants to jump on the Romans' back and slit their throat. Does he also choose somebody who's collecting taxes for the Romans? How do you think Levi, Matthew, and Simon are getting along? Someone asked me today, you wonder if they were teamed up in the 2x2 when they went out. You talk about different philosophies, and now what brought them together?
Jesus did.
Jesus Christ. And that's what brings people together today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yo.
There is going to be a study tomorrow, right?
There is a study tomorrow.